And now it's time for the 2014 Web Lecture Award presentation. It's my pleasure to serve as Toastmaster this morning as we pay tribute to Charles Daniels for his excellence in pharmacy management, leadership in pharmacy practice, and advancement of health system pharmacy. Lunch will take place immediately after Dr. Daniels' lecture. But first, let me introduce to you some of our distinguished guests this morning. Ms. Christine Jalowski, President of ASHP Board of Directors. John Reynolds, Dean of Northeastern University School of Pharmacy. And of course, Dr. Charles Daniels, Pharmacist in Chief and Associate Dean of the University of California San Diego Health System, SCAGS School of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences, our honoree. I'll now invite Christine Jalowski, ASHP President, to the podium.
I am very honored to be able to bring greetings from ASHP and the ASHP Board of Directors for our distinguished awardee today, my friend Chuck Daniels, and also to all of you attendees at the Leadership Conference and our special guests today. I'd like to give you a little bit of background on the Webb Lecture Award and ASHP's relationship with Northeastern University. This award was first established as the John W. Webb Visiting Professorship in Hospital Pharmacy by Northeastern University College of Pharmacy and Allied Health Professions in Boston, Massachusetts. They established the award in 1985 and have since continued to annually recognize individuals for their leadership in pharmacy, hospital pharmacy, and health system pharmacy management. Beginning in 2006, ASHP established a deeper relationship with Northeastern University by taking on responsibility for this award. And subsequently, in 2007, the ASHP section of practice managers was bestowed the honor of establishing a selection committee for this annual award. The recipient of the Webb Lecture Award has since delivered an award lecture at the ASHP Conference for Leaders in Health System Pharmacy, which is this meeting. And they also participate in traditional activities associated with the award as a visiting professor in hospital pharmacy at Northeastern University. This relationship with Northeastern University is highly valued, as it really does support our role and our goals in advancing leadership in the practice of hospital and health system pharmacy. This year is a special one because we recognize and celebrate the 30th anniversary of the John W. Webb Award. So as we look at this, we can reflect on our past and look for the future. Throughout the 30-year history of the award, we've had the privilege of recognizing pharmacy leaders that have shaped our profession. And during this conference and next weekend at Northeastern University, there's a number of events to celebrate. And today, we're able to celebrate with 13 past recipients of this award. So could you please stand and be recognized? David A. Zills, Rita Shane, Paul Abramowitz, Carol Willenberg, Bill Zellmer, Dave Cavance, Bernice Breland, Mary Ann Ivey, Tom Thilke, Jim Stevenson, Paul Bush, Toby Clark, and Ray Maddox. Please join me in congratulating our past award recipients on their honor and thank them for their leadership. So Chuck, on behalf of ASHP, congratulations on your selection as the distinguished recipient for this year's award.
Thank you, Christine. Now I'd like to ask Dr. John Reynolds to the podium to make comments on behalf of Northeastern University and to introduce our honoree.
Thank you very much. Today, I have the honor and great pleasure of bringing greetings from the School of Pharmacy at Northeastern University. This lecture is sponsored by the ASHP section of Pharmacy Practice Managers and Northeastern and is a centerpiece of our management training initiatives. The John W. Webb Visiting Professor Lecture was established in 1985 by Mr. William Gavea and Dr. Jerry Schumacher of Northeastern University to recognize the achievements of John W. Webb. Mr. Webb was a prominent practitioner, educator, practice innovator, and professional leader, and was the founding director of the graduate program in health system pharmacy at Northeastern University. Much of the strength of the program was its affiliation with a number of academic medical centers in the Boston area. John Webb was the director of pharmacy at the Massachusetts General Hospital for many years. He was an innovator who had a number of major achievements in our profession. He led the clinical pharmacy movement in the Boston area in the mid-1960s by placing pharmacists on the patient care units to interact with the medical and nursing staffs in managing patient care. And he conducted research on computerized prescriber order entry, putting him ahead of his time in the application of informatics in pharmacy. John also spent much of his time mentoring his many residents and graduate students. As Bill Gavea says, patience, kindness, and continuing support were the hallmarks of his tutelage. With that said, and in recognition of these traditions of excellence, it is my pleasure to introduce our John W. Webb Lecture Award recipient for 2014, Charles E. Daniels. Dr. Daniels is Associate Dean and Professor of Clinical Pharmacy in the Skaggs School of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of California, San Diego. And he's Pharmacist in Chief for the UC San Diego Health System, providing strategic leadership and management for pharmacy services in inpatient and ambulatory care programs. Prior to joining UC San Diego, Dr. Daniels was Chief of the Pharmacy Department at the National Institutes of Health Clinical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. Before that, he was a member of the faculty at the University of Minnesota College of Pharmacy in Minneapolis, with pharmacy management duties at the University of Minnesota Hospital and Clinic. Dr. Daniels received a Bachelor of Science degree from the University of Arizona and completed a hospital pharmacy residency at the NIH. He then went on to earn a PhD in social administrative pharmacy at the University of Minnesota as a fellow of the American Foundation for Pharmaceutical Education. In 1999, Dr. Daniels was honored as one of the 50 most influential pharmacists in the United States by American Druggist Magazine. He's been honored as a fellow of ASHP and as a correspondent à titre étranger of the French Académie Nationale de Pharmacie. He has authored more than 50 professional and scientific journal articles and book chapters. He has served as the ASHP Commission on Credentialing, and has presented and written on pharmacy residency training. He served as a member of the Get Healthy California work group charged with the redesign of the health system to provide efficient, safe, and patient-centered care in the state of California. Most recently, he has conducted research into the impact of pharmacists in hospital-to-home care transitions, pharmacy automation, and medication safety systems. The Webb Lecturer is a contemplative manager, namely an individual manager who has given the opportunity to reflect deeply on a topic of his or her choosing to leave the profession with a stronger vision for leadership. It is time for Dr. Daniels to share his contemplation with us. And now, Thomas Kirschling will join me on the lectern as we invite Dr. Daniels to come forward and accept the award.
The award reads, the ASHP Section of Pharmacy Practice Managers at Northeastern University School of Pharmacy present Charles E. Daniels with the John W. Webb Lecture Award for Excellence in Pharmacy Management, Leadership in Pharmacy Practice, and Advancing Health System Pharmacy, October 20th, 2014. Congratulations. We have now arrived at the time we've all been waiting for, the address by Dr. Charles Daniels entitled, Who Will Sit in My Chair?
I'll take my...
Okay.
He almost ran off with my notes. that would have been a disaster. So I have this dreaded slot just before lunch. So I'm aware that many of you, as perhaps myself, stomach are starting to rumble a little bit. I also have the awkward position of following somebody that can come up here and engage our attention for well over an hour in leopard skin and red high heels. This is not exactly the spot you all look for, I'm sure. So I normally ad lib, I usually work with slides. I've chosen to not do that today because this is truly a special opportunity for me, and I'm looking forward to the chance to share a few of the ideas that have come to me since announcement that I would be speaking today. I will be doing what I don't like to do, and that is reading some parts from the script, but I've been practicing, so hopefully it won't sound too practiced. So the title of my presentation is Who Will Sit in My Chair? I'd like to thank the Webb Selection Committee for this great honor to be the 30th recipient of the award. The list of previous Webb Award winners is a cross-section of some of the most influential and finest leaders we've had in health system pharmacy. So to be included in that group, many of whom are here today, is such an honor. Previous awardees have led Webb lecture audiences through investigation, introspection, analysis, and inspiration. I can't be more inspirational than Ray Maddox was last year, so I won't try to be. Instead, I'm going to comment on the view from my chair on what I think it will take in coming times for our leaders to be as progressive and successful as we have been for the last 30 years. In searching for insight, I considered inspiration from video archives. There are many out there to pick from. Currently, I recommend the Lego Movie. It has some profound lessons on leadership. The reluctant hero of the story, I know many of you will have seen it, but for those that haven't, the reluctant hero of the story is Emmett, a standard issue Lego construction worker who's part of the team. He has no leadership experience, and Emmett is accidentally cast into the role of the special, a leader of prophecy. The evil Lord Business has built walls to prevent creativity across the many Lego worlds. The Lord Business has become problematic. No one has been able to defeat him to date. The Lego Movie is about Emmett's transformation from invisible team member to winning leader. And that's the message that I would like you to think about as you watch that more closely next time. Now, Emmett experienced my own leadership nightmare when his fire 'em up speech to the masked Lego characters that included Superman, Batman, Gandalf, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and other superheroes from Lego cast turned into a disaster. During his personal growth journey, Emmett finds that you can use practical everyday skills to save the universe. If you wonder about the credibility of that story, let me remind you that Jim Collins and his Built to Last co-author, Jerry Porras, notes that from their research, you don't have to be a high-profile, charismatic leader. If you are, that's fine, but if you're not, that's okay too. Their research concludes that leaders of visionary companies are clock builders, not time tellers. Emmett demonstrated himself to be a clock builder. For those of you who haven't seen the movie already, I won't spoil the ending. When the movie finally connects the fantasy world weapon Kragle with its real-life inspiration, a final lesson in creative leadership becomes apparent. I will encourage you to all have a look at it. I want to also clarify a couple of terms that I will use today during this address. I'm using the word leader to be synonymous with formal leader. I understand that leadership skills abound in people who are not in formal leadership positions. I also understand there's a difference between being a manager and being a leader. So I have one of the best jobs in the world. I have the privilege to be the pharmacist in chief for the U.S. News top health system in San Diego, the UC San Diego. I've been there 10 years. I have a talented and creative management team, and I have more high-quality technicians, pharmacists, and administrative staff than any chief is really entitled to. The process that has evolved over 10 years has also allowed us to have great support from the medical staff and hospital administration to pursue excellence, and that's what we've done. In my role, I get to determine where and how the pharmacy enterprise connects with the goals of my organization. I work with my team, we plot and navigate a course to get there. In a sense, I have the keys to the car for a road trip, and I get to pick where we go next. So I also have the privilege to be the preceptor for 12 first-year residents every year on their admin rotation. They're some of the brightest and best of the graduates of our PharmD program each year. On my rotation, I ask the residents who will sit in my chair in 10 years. You see, I anticipate stepping down sometime in the next 10 years. And so that's the framework for 2024, which is the number you'll hear me use a bit during the presentation. When I choose to step down or am escorted out, as the case may be, I'd like my work to last a little while after I leave. So you see, it makes a difference to me that I'm replaced by a creative leader. When I then ask if they want to sit in my chair when I leave, I get total silence. It's a launch pad to some interesting discussions, but the point is that none of the residents at that early stage of their career see my chair in their future. So Jack Welch, former CEO of GE, said, "Control your own destiny or someone else will." I modify that a little bit, and I tell the residents that if we choose to abdicate our leadership role, we give up our professional destiny. Based on the silence I get from these bright young pharmacists, that many of whom will be qualified to sit in my chair, I wonder if we're looking at our next generation of pharmacy leaders through the correct lens. Are we giving them the tools and experiences that they need to keep us moving forward? Or are we continuing in the way we've prepared leaders for directors' chairs today? Will they be successful where we expect pharmacy to be in 2024? Chicago is a great hockey town, and the NHL season has just begun, so I'll use a hockey reference throughout this presentation. The all-time great hockey player Wayne Gretzky said that a good hockey player plays where the puck is. A great hockey player plays where the puck is going to be. So let's think about pharmacy, where the pharmacy puck is going to be in 10 years. What is the likely health system world of 2024? Will we be employed by health provider systems, as most of us are now, by accountable care organizations or accountable care networks? Will we be employed by payers or somebody else? I'm not sure the answer is out there right now, but I think we need to be thinking of that. Who will make the key decisions, and what are those principles? It will have been more than a decade since the Affordable Care Act, along with the current commercial change, have modified what we look at and how we proceed in the current healthcare cycle. We've already seen some of the changes from that cycle. We've heard about them this morning. We've already seen the beginnings of expanded accountability for patients who move from hospital to home and back again. We've seen experiments in shared risk and provider network restructuring. Most of these impact on pharmacy practice. It's difficult to predict what will work and what will fall by the wayside, but it's safe to say that it will be different. What will pharmacists or technicians be able to do by law, and what competencies will be needed? What will our colleagues expect from us? I'm sure we'll be able to see more pharmacist responsibilities directly to patients across the care settings, a practice where pharmacists will provide their business card to patients at discharge with the plan to meet with them in 72 hours has already begun in many places. More authority and accountability will become part of our future if we're up to it. We have always relied on our elite pharmacy practice leaders to drive big change in pharmacy. They have delivered many visionary changes. But who will find the opportunities in the future, and what is their career path? What experiences will create the teamwork for our future success? Where will our pharmacy startups come from? I offer this hypothesis. Future pharmacy leaders will need more clinical experience than they have needed up to now. Moving highly trained pharmacists into formal management roles too early may deprive them of critical patient care experience that will limit their ability in 2024. In a classic 1960s book, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, Dr. Thomas Kuhn theorized that revolutions in science are not a result of step-by-step unveiling of how things work. Instead, scientists work within their space or paradigm with rules that are defined and questions that are only relevant through the agreement of the discipline. The definition of the rules within a paradigm allow colleagues to avoid chaos as they conduct their normal scientific work. Within a paradigm, there is an understanding that the rules will not work perfectly and explain every experiment conducted. Some incongruent findings are excused, attributed to either method or measurement limitations. Kuhn goes on to explain that over time, enough of the incongruent findings create cracks in the paradigm when the right level of discord and plausible alternative explanations is reached, the old paradigm is replaced with a new one. Out went the Earth as center of the universe, and in came the paradigm with planets revolving around the sun. Kuhn's concept of scientific revolution is the foundation of the term paradigm shift. In 1985, an invitational conference at the Hilton Head Resort in South Carolina became a major reference point for most hospital pharmacists of the time. At that conference, a cross-section of the most influential pharmacists of the day met to discuss directions for clinical pharmacy practice. I wasn't on that invite list, I'll just let you know. Many Hilton Head participants still influence health system practice today, and for that matter, some of them have been web lecturers in previous years. Key elements of the conference influenced the direction of health system pharmacy practice for a generation. It allowed us to understand and fully accept pharmacy as a clinical profession. It helped define what was important and where to aim. One of the stinging consensus statements from that meeting was that pharmacy administration was the most significant obstacle to the expansion of the clinical pharmacy model. I don't know the impact of Hilton Head's takeaway messages on others. I turned down an offer to take a pharmacy director position in Minneapolis, a city and pharmacy community that I love very much, because that hospital's expectation was to keep the pharmacy staff small and don't challenge the docs. The principles of Hilton Head Conference became the paradigm, if you will, for my generation of pharmacy leaders. Under the Hilton Head paradigm, pharmacy practitioners have created expertise and roles for pharmacists and technicians in patient care, safe medication use, and improved outcomes. The Pharmacy Practice Model Initiative was launched with the summit of 2010. Much effort has come from that focus on our professional energy, has come to practice our professional focus on new goals. Goals that look toward broader roles for pharmacists and pharmacy technicians. Greater use of automation and technology. More emphasis on proper credentials to be sure that we can deliver in an unclear future. They emphasize accountability for patient outcomes. Broad themes that have come out of the PPMI include pharmacists practicing with their full expertise in a wider scope of practice. We know that federal and state provider legislation is in process right now. The 2014 ASHP Ambulatory Care Practice Conference speaks of an expanding healthcare system that firmly attaches the work of health system pharmacists to their patients, not to their physical or organizational place in the system. The line between inpatient and outpatient pharmacist responsibilities has turned to gray and may disappear in my professional lifetime. Is the pharmacy practice model initiative the declaration of a paradigm shift? Are we changing the rules that govern what is most important and how we'll work within that framework? Is the definition of important questions and how we measure them different than in the past? Health systems are moving toward a more prominent role for clinicians in leadership of the organization. Physicians have more influence, are more influential in strategic and tactical actions of the top provider organizations. In his 2000 web lecture, Paul Abramowitz talked about the importance for successful leaders to develop real human relationships with colleagues and patients. How great to let that happen through longer clinical steeping time for pharmacists who will be playing the puck in the future. 3 years ago, I had the privilege to participate as a member in an 18-month leadership development class run by my organization. The class had 25 members, one hospital administrator, one nurse director, 22 physicians, and myself. These very talented and experienced clinicians are on course for leadership positions in my organization and around the country. The program met monthly. Assignments were done in small groups on evenings and weekends. My group met multiple times on formal team assignments, looking at multiple topics. An invaluable opportunity for me was to better know these physicians as teammates with no hierarchy and to learn how they defined issues. It was the chance to develop real relationships with them. That experience has been helpful to me since then. It's also been the chance to observe how clinicians assimilate the tools to be department chairs, division chiefs, and deans of medical schools. The medical leaders of the present have learned to take care of patients on their road to becoming good health system leaders. So what is the checklist for successful leaders in pharmacy's future? I think it includes all the things we teach directors in training now, many of the topics that are on today and tomorrow's agenda. They include people skills, financial and budget knowledge, pharmacy systems operations, and planning. They'll be as important as ever. The more repetitions of these tools, the better for our leaders. In his 1998 book, Sources of Power, How People Make Decisions, Gary Klein considers the role of intuition in decision making. Mr. Klein described his research on experienced decision makers with high stakes choices, poorly defined procedures, incomplete information, and unclear goals. That might be the future. One of the cases that Klein reports on in the book is the story of a fire captain who believes his crew to be responding to a fire in the wall in a multi-story structure. Upon entry into the building, he rapidly analyzed the situation and ordered the crew out just before the floor collapsed. Upon interview, the captain initially stated that his response was just intuition. He couldn't explain why he sensed the impending disaster. In Klein's series of interviews with other firefighters, pediatric IC nurses, multiple other decision makers, a similar intuition-based decision emerged with these veteran leaders in complex situations. Klein concluded that experienced decision makers use a much different process than less experienced leaders. He concludes that intuition depends on experience to recognize key patterns that indicate the dynamics of the situation. he created the term recognition-primed decision-making to describe his findings. Recognition-primed decision-makers look at the situation and judge it to be either familiar or unfamiliar. They evaluate options one at a time rather than comparing a list of the strengths and weaknesses of all of the options. They evaluate courses of action based on by imagining how they can be carried out. They select the first workable option and they act. They're poised for action rather than paralyzed by evaluating all the options. Sometimes their intuition fails and they are wrong, a painful but important process. In his many years as one of the leading management thought leaders, the late Peter F. Drucker defined the roles of manager to be planning, organizing, directing, and controlling. He differentiates planning from strategy. Planning is a way to optimize tomorrow from today's trends. Strategy aims to exploit the different opportunities of tomorrow. He believed that unique events cannot be planned but can be foreseen. What unique events will create opportunities for pharmacy? Clinical experience will be important to understand how to foresee and exploit different opportunities. Our objective should be to provide our future leaders with enough repetitions to become recognition prime decision makers. I believe that the pharmacist who sits in my chair next must incorporate clinical experience in the recognition prime decision making process. In addition to the things needed from health system pharmacy leaders for the last many years, future pharmacy leaders will need to understand patient care up close with enough repetitions so they can imagine the courses of action required to improve quality and become and outcomes as a recognition prime clinician. A tradition from our pre-Hilton Head days is fast-tracking young pharmacists with great problem-solving skills and leadership curiosity into management positions as quickly as possible. We believe that more and more aggregated responsibility should be their measure of career success. More people reporting to you, bigger budgets to manage, more services to account for. Perhaps the objective is right, but I believe the timetable is wrong. I'm not sure that faster is better. My advice to residents who might secretly want to sit in my chair is to start by becoming the best pharmacist that you can be. Enhance your clinical skills, become board certified, develop group leadership skills. You can work on and lead pharmacy as well as interprofessional process improvement teams. In 5 years, you may then have a proven skill set that will strengthen your decisions as you lead a work unit. Will you need to understand finances and personnel and know how to do planning and manage distribution systems? Absolutely. As we think about pharmacy leaders of the future, we can't afford to overlook the leadership potential in mid-career pharmacists. Many have not been involved as formal leaders in their work world. Many of them already have the qualities I've proposed as important. Can they learn the rest of the tools at a time when they need them, like physicians do? Many of them can. In my travels as a residency survey volunteer, I've had the chance to look under a lot of health system pharmacy hoods. In that role, I've met a lot of great pharmacy department directors in all-sized hospitals that never expected to earn their own leadership chair. They just wanted to be great pharmacists. In most of those cases, the opportunity came because their work with the medical staff gave their expertise great exposure. When the need to replace the director occurred in that organization, their docs were quick to recommend their clinical teammate to hospital administration. They had proven themselves to their clinical teammate by being outstanding pharmacists. That same relationship gave them a strong support group as they took the chair. Their pharmacist experience may be exactly what it will take for success as a leader in the new paradigm. One of the critical elements of Kuhn's description of paradigm change is that many who are successful in their current paradigm have a difficult time moving to the new one. Many who were trained to solve research questions and be successful in the old paradigm can't make the switch to the new rules for success. If we are moving to a new paradigm for pharmacy, we must be sure that we train our future leaders for the point when the lines intersect, the point where pharmacy practice opportunity optimally contributes to the needs of our patients and to society. So I end with this challenge to all of you. For those of you who have recently received your own chair, please remember that you are stewards of that chair and responsible to see where the puck is going and navigating the hopes of many. It's a precious gift that few of us ever get. Use that privilege to move your enterprise to a place of your vision. For those of you who might want to sit in my chair, I hope there are many, and I encourage you to become the best pharmacist that you can be. It's part of your management development checklist. Add clinical experience as part of your recognition-primed decision-maker style. For those of you, like me, with a chair to be filled in the next 10 years, be a clock builder. Take an active role so that your work is built to last. That means deciding where the lines of pharmacy practice and healthcare will intersect in the future. That's the place you need to skate to, then you need to help your staff and managers get there. Abraham Lincoln said, "The best thing about the future is that it comes one day at a time." As that future comes at us in this step-by-step rhythm, let us define a new generation of pharmacist leaders who are rich in patient care experience and will use that experience to take us where the puck will be. I'm honored to be recognized as the 2014 John W. Webb Lecturer. My thanks to all of you and best wishes. Thank you.